to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. This episode is brought to you by Carol L. Campos Coaching. Why coach with me when there are so many coaches out there? I do things differently. I don't jump right into your goal. Why? Well, what I've learned is that the subconscious mind is running 90% of the show. That's where we start. We clear any emotional blocks and limiting beliefs first, making sure you know your why and are aligned with where you're headed before tackling your goal. Whether you want to change careers or simply want more joy in your life, I can teach you strategies to help you gain the clarity needed to go where your heart is calling. To get started, I invite you to sign up for a free discovery session at carollcampos.com. Together, let's light your path. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Our guest today is Kristen Sherry, a four-time author, including her acclaimed book, You Map, Find Yourself, Blaze Your Path, and Show the World, which is transforming the way people look for jobs, change careers, or start a business. Kristen is also an international speaker, trainer, and career consultant. She's the managing partner of UMAP LLC, which certifies aspiring coaches, recruiters, career services, and HR professionals as UMAP coaches and UMAP workshop facilitators. Kristen worked in the corporate world for over 20 years, and although she liked her various jobs, something always seemed to be missing. In 2014, she met with her mentor and did what's called a values assessment. It was then that she realized that the work she was doing didn't align with her values. So what did she do? She decided to start her own business. So today we'll be talking with Kristen about UMAP and how learning our innate strengths and values, motivated skills, and what she refers to as burnout skills can help steer us towards a career that provides fulfillment. As you know, here at The Divine Breadcrumb, we're all about helping you to find your path, and anything that helps you to do that, well, let's just say we have to share it. So we also want to talk about her new book, Your Team Loves Mondays, Right? Which just from the title sounds like a must read for anyone in leadership or someone who wants to be in a leadership role. So lots to get to. Welcome, Kristen. We're so happy to have you with us here today.
Thank you, Carol and Deb. It's delightful to be with you. That was an amazing introduction, probably the best I've ever heard. So thank you for that. I'm like, Carol does her homework.
We try.
Thank you. And I love the name of this podcast, and I love you. So it's just a wonderful marriage. So
thank you. Well, Kristen, I touched on the fact that you did a values assessment in 2014. What did you find out about yourself, and how did that change the direction of your career?
Well, I knew something was wrong, right? Because when you have symptoms, you know there's an underlying problem. And those symptoms for me were headaches on Fridays. I had such a terrible headache at the end of the week. I was complaining a lot. Normally, I'm a positive person, but I was being very negative and complaining to my husband a lot and felt guilty about it because I could see the effect it had on him. But I needed an outlet to get the poison out. I felt like I was being slowly poisoned. And I really did not have a good understanding of why that was. I couldn't put my finger on it. And it really frustrated me that I couldn't crack the puzzle. I kept shifting around from job to job, manager to manager, trying different roles. And it just never left me. And I really didn't know what was going on. So I got on the phone. Actually, it started with a trip I took to Boston. And I went to a conference, and the person leading the conference ended up becoming my mentor. His name is Steve Leshansky. And Steve asked me when I was at the conference, do you know what your values are? No one had ever asked me that question in my life. And I said, of course, just as a reflective response. And then I wasn't expecting the follow-up, well, what are they? So always be careful when you say you know something, because I might call you to the carpet. And so I was sort of a bit of a deer in the headlights when he asked me that question. And it's not that I was lying. I just never really, I thought, how could I not know what I value? And so I just responsively said yes. But when he said, well, what are they? I realized I don't have the foggiest clue. And so I just said, family, my family. And he said, family isn't a value. And I thought, oh, okay. So, okay, not only do I not know what I value, but I don't know what a value is. So I said, well, how can that not be a value? He said, well, there are lots of bad families out there, and people wouldn't say that they value the abusive relationships in their families. So it's not the family that you value. It's what you believe that your family gives you in your life. So what is that? And he said, don't worry, we'll unpack this. And we got on the phone and we started to talk about that. And so your family can give you things like belonging or acceptance, love, connection, all kinds of things that your family can give you. And that's what you value, not the family itself, so to speak. And that's a touchy subject for people, because we feel so strongly, most of us, about members of our family. So to hear you don't value your family can really kind of trigger people. But it's really the truth that we value what we get from those relationships or can give, either one. So usefulness. Some people value usefulness as far as their family goes. And that's sort of giving from you to other people. It's not always about what you're getting, but also what you're giving. And so what I found out was my top four values were being violated. We went through this process and he asked me, what are times in your life when you felt happiest, most fulfilled, and satisfied? And I started storytelling around times that I felt fulfilled in my life, times that I felt happy. And he said, okay, what was it about those things that made you feel that way? And I started to say things like, well, I really felt connected to my husband when we had that experience. And he's like, oh, so you value things like love and connection. And that's what I really meant when I said I value my family, is I value love and connection with others. That was not being honored in my workplace. There was a territorial environment. It was very individualistic. People were out to achieve their own goals. It wasn't collaborative. They tried to make it collaborative, but it was very forced. And so everyone worked in silos. So I didn't have a sense of connection at work. The second thing that was going on was I value autonomy. I like to bring ideas and strategies and have the ability to run with them. And every time I would bring an idea, no, we're not going to do that. Instead, here are the 9 goals you're going to work on next year. And a lot of my work was dictated to me. And I just didn't feel passion for it because it was someone else's directive instead of something I could get behind. So I really didn't have any autonomy in terms of what I worked on and sometimes even how I worked on it. The third thing that was going on was I didn't see how my work directly had an impact. I was responsible for the process of onboarding new associates into a 5,000-person organization. I was responsible for learning delivery, whether that was instructor-led or on our e-learning platform. I had leadership oversight over essentially learning in the organization. and onboarding associates. And so I couldn't see how the work I was doing, which was largely process creation and process improvement, how that affected anyone's life. Maybe the folks who work for me had more of a hands-on touch to see how that onboarding experience made a difference, but I didn't have that direct pulse, if you will, into what was happening. So other than anecdotally from my team. So I wasn't making a difference in anyone's life as far as I could tell. And my fourth value was fun. And it had become so toxic in the culture I was working in that people were not even smiling much in meetings. It was just everyone was unhappy, and there was a lot of gossip that started as a result of that, and it just wasn't fun to be there. And the culmination of those four values violations just sucked the life out of my soul, and I really couldn't handle it anymore. I was just getting to the point where I couldn't sleep. We had such anxiety when I would wake up in the morning and realize it wasn't Saturday or Sunday that I don't even know how I was getting up and doing that every day. So long answer to a simple question, right?
No, I love that answer because, and I think so many people resonate with this.
Yes.
I mean, as you were talking, Kristen, I kept thinking, yep. 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 I remember exactly that.
Yeah. It's really interesting because we know something's wrong, but if we don't take the time to explore what's important to us, then we can't really put our finger on what it is. And my grandmother used to say that a problem identified is a problem half solved. And so you see people trying to do a lot of different things to improve their situation, but they really don't have a diagnosis. It's almost like having a disease and guessing what's wrong with you, and you start self-medicating or trying to fix yourself, and you don't even really know what's wrong with you. I feel like that's what I was doing with my career. I was doing all of these things and all of these activities, thinking I was being proactive to increase my career satisfaction, but I didn't even know what the problem was. So all of the efforts were sort of like spinning my wheels.
Right. And I think if you don't do, you know, sort of the self-work to identify the problem, you just keep moving from a situation to the same situation somewhere else, maybe slightly differently, but it just keeps repeating itself because you haven't identified the issue.
Oh, you're exactly right. Because for me, that autonomy translated to every time my boss would be on vacation, I was the happiest I ever was at work. And I will tell you, I've always had good boss relationships. I can't think of a single boss I've ever had where I had a contentious or conflict-laden relationship. That's something my mother taught me. My mother's an executive coach, and she taught me your boss is your number one customer. She always taught me that. Your number one job is to make your boss look good. And it sounded really weird when she told me that. But once I went into the workplace and started doing it, oh my goodness, there were people on my team who had much less freedom than I did. And it's not right, but my boss played favorites with me. And the only reason was because I endeavored to make my boss look good. So I always had good boss relationships, but I never knew why is it that I love when my bosses go on vacation and the days counting down to them coming back, I would start to get depressed.
Yeah.
I really couldn't figure that out because it's like, I like Liz, I like Glenn, I like whoever, you know, why is this happening? And I realized it had nothing to do with that person. It was because I wanted to be doing my own thing. I needed, in my case, to be an entrepreneur. That's not the case for everyone. It's not for everyone. But that entrepreneurial pull, the voice was never silenced by all the moves I made. To your point, Deb, I just kept moving and moving, and the same problems followed, and sometimes introduced new ones because maybe certain values were honored where I was, and now I've gone into another situation, and now different values are being violated.
Exactly. It's kind of like that, you know, when you're younger and you move to a new apartment because there's something wrong with the one you're living in, but there's something worse wrong with the new one. You know, yeah. It's just, and so you move again and then there's some other issue. So it's, you know, it's that same thing. Mm-hmm. Could you give our listeners a little overview of UMAP and what it entails?
Sure. So even me, having been raised by a coach who taught me self-awareness, there were still gaps in that picture. And so when I filled those gaps and really discovered what it was, I spoke to a lot of people. I interviewed people. I was talking to people on the phone and in person. And everyone I spoke to, I kept notes on why they were or weren't happy in their career. And I looked for patterns. And I found those four pillars of career satisfaction. Your work needs to align to your strengths. Your work needs to align to what's most important to you, which is your values. Your work needs to align to the skills that you're good at and enjoy using, not skills that you're good at but don't enjoy using, or skills that you're not good at and don't enjoy using, and also to your personality, which largely shapes our interests. And so those four pillars are what make up UMAP. So UMAP is really in three forms. It's actually a career profile assessment that people can take to find their four pillars. It's also a book that walks people through doing the assessment. And it's also a certification for like personal branding specialists, consultants, coaches, HR people, recruiters who want to do UMAP with their employees, students, or clients. So I just really felt so passionate. I was on a different path career-wise completely. I was doing executive coaching like my mother was. But because my own journey impacted me and impacted my just life satisfaction. I mean, we spend a third of our life at work.
Yes.
So when that's not going well and you sleep a third of your life, you've got a third of your life to derive joy. And if you are having a lot of issues there in your personal life, all three of those segments are a problem, unless you have great dream life, I suppose. But the point is that I pivoted my own career. I was an entrepreneur doing executive coaching. But I just reflected on the fact that it took me so long, 40-something. I'm 48 now, so I don't know. I guess I was 42 or 43 when I figured myself out. It took me so long to figure myself out. I thought, I have to put this in a repeatable process that works for people without me, because I can only help one person at a time. And so that's how UMAP came to be. And I wrote the book because I really couldn't handle it when someone would call me and tell me their situation and how they were breaking out into hives. They were crying at the dinner table in front of their children after work. They were thinking, like, I think I'm going to have a nervous breakdown. And they would tell me these stories. And then I would say, well, I know I can help you. And then they would get the proposal and they would say, I know I need to do this, but I can't afford it. And I first got in the habit of just helping people who couldn't afford it for free. And I thought, well, now I'm not going to be able to pay for my kids' college and my obligations. So I thought, this is not sustainable. So I thought, I'm going to put everything I know about this process into a book and people can help themselves kind of DIY their career fit, if you will.
Yeah. And I have actually gone through the process. And Deb and I were talking about this earlier. It is fascinating kind of what you learn about yourself. So my top strengths, and this goes to your point, Kristen, about how when you were at work, a lot of your values were being violated. And one of my top is connectedness.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Don't ever work from home. Do you work from home?
I do. Right now I do. But that's one of the things that it's caused me to get out more. Now Deb and I are kind of trying to partner up with people in the community and doing things like that. And
there you go.
That kind of makes sense. But it also Relator and Harmony are two of my others. And some of these things were just always considered just, you know, you're too soft, you're too nice. You know, it wasn't valued when I was in the corporate world. Mm. And now it kind of makes sense where that unhappiness was coming from. So I wanted to ask you, why do you think it's so important to be aligned with your values? I think everybody gets being aligned with your strengths, but I think the idea of being aligned with your values is a newer way of thinking when you're thinking in terms of your career.
Yeah, you're so spot on when you say it's a newer thing, because it's not something that people ever thought about. And we are becoming more and more values driven as times have changed. And it's, when you think about it, it makes sense. Before, people used to work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week in factories. They would get Sunday off to go to church, Sunday dinner with their family. And that was life. And work was really about survival, right? It was about being able to eat and have a roof over your head. Well, times have changed. With technology, we have more time because we're not washing our laundry on scrub boards, and we can microwave things, and we can drive places instead of taking horses. So we have more time. It seems like we have less time because we fill it with some of our gadgets, but technically speaking, we have more time that is not spent on survival needs. And when you move into a society that has more time, we can start to go inward more and start to reflect more. And some people will say we've gotten soft because now we have time to navel gaze. It doesn't matter what the reason is. The fact is, here we are. So we have to deal with that. And because we're more self-reflective, we want more from life now. We want more than surviving. So I think it's important because it's the foundation for decision-making. You have a lot of choices that present every day. Should I collaborate with this person? Should I move to this city? Should we have my aging parents move in with us? All of these things that you're asking yourself, should I do this? Should I do that? And all of those decisions, our life becomes the product of our decisions, right?
Right.
So if you are making decisions separate from what's important to you, you really will never reach the vision that you have for your life, or you won't have one. And I write this quote in the book, but I love it. Helen Keller said, "The only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision."
Love that.
And that's essentially why, in a nutshell, Carol, to your question, is if you don't align everything to your values, not just work, but your personal life, your relationships, how you spend your time, you will have sight but no vision.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes complete sense. And I just, well, you got to love a Helen Keller quote. I mean, let's be honest, she has so many good ones.
Yeah. And she's earned the right to say all those things.
Absolutely.
So the other thing that this idea of strengths, but with things that you don't like to do, I remember, and of course, I don't remember his name, which is unfortunate, but he was a very successful, I believe he was working in finance, Wall Street, very, very good at it, young, late 20s maybe, and he did a TED talk. I wish I could remember his name. And he talked about the fact that he absolutely hated it, but he was really, really good at it. And his whole family behind him had done this as well. And so that's why he did what his father did and what his grandfather did. And that he finally realized that that's not how you choose your career. Just because you're good at something, that doesn't make it the thing that you do. And I think so many people pick their career that way.
Oh, yeah.
They do what they're good at. I ended up being a business major, and I would have been really good at being an accountant, but I can't imagine being an accountant. No slam on accountants, but I just can't imagine doing that for a living.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thought to step outside of that and realize that that's not the tool that you use to make the decision.
Yeah. So I was doing this Girls on Fire event in Charlotte. I don't know if you know Brandy Holloway and Vanessa Lane, but they do these Girls on Fire events where they help women own their fire. And she asked me to come be a speaker. And so we were putting people in the hot seat where we would challenge their limiting beliefs. And this one woman, of course, mine was on the career piece. Lila Smith was there as well, speaking on messaging. So this woman came and sat in the hot seat, and I said, "What do you absolutely love about your job?" And she told me, and I said, "Okay, what do you absolutely hate about your job?" And she said, "I hate doing inventory." And I said, well, why are you doing it? And she said, well, it needs to be done. And I'm really good at it. And I said, well, I'm going to ask you again, why are you doing it? And she said, because I have to. And I said, oh, is that so? You have to. Okay. And so I asked her to justify that. Why do you have to do it? And of course, it always comes down to, well, it needs to get done. And then we go into this endless loop of, well, why does it need to be you that's doing it? And then we all ultimately get to the real root cause that says, well, I can't really afford to bring anybody on. And I'll say, okay, how many hours a week are you spending doing inventory? And she says, well, it's about 2 hours a week. And I said to her, so you're telling me that you couldn't come up with between 16, well, probably around $16 a week to pay a virtual assistant to do that for you. You couldn't come up with $16. How much do you think not having that weight on your shoulders is worth to you? Is it worth more than $16? And every time I talk to people about that, I went to Dubai to speak at a business breakfast and do a book signing there. And I met with a coach friend of mine who lives in Dubai. And she told me she was still doing her own invoicing and her own proposals. And I said, why are you doing that? There's no reason for you to be doing that. And so I tried to convince her of the opportunity cost of how when she's spending her time doing something she hates doing, she's not investing in things that actually grow her business or make a difference in people's lives or the things that are important to her. And she wrote me this message and said, I did what you said, and I got a virtual assistant, and it's been like a huge weight off my shoulder and life-changing. But we tell ourselves these stories and we pretend they're facts. We say, oh, I have to do this. I have no choice. Really? That's fascinating to know that if you got hit by a bus, that entire enterprise that you work in, that all of Dell, that Coca-Cola would go out of business because you weren't doing the Excel reports. That's yep. fascinating. I hope they're paying you a lot of money because that's an expensive brand you're holding up.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people, you need that reality check.
We're all replaceable.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean we don't add value, but we're definitely replaceable.
Right. Right. And I think I did learn that fairly early on. I remember one of the first few jobs that I was leaving and I being all stressed out about giving my notice. And my mother said to me, if they wanted to get rid of you, they wouldn't think twice about it.
Oh, my mother said that to me too. Yeah. She said, companies never love you back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I love the title of your new book, Your Team Loves Mondays, Right? Can you tell us a little bit about it? And why did you feel there was a need for this book at this time?
Oh, I love your question. What a good question. So the reason I wrote the book was because I couldn't stand that I was only helping on one side of the job seeker equation. One of the things that I noticed over and over again with people is, and you read this statistic all the time, is that a large number of people are leaving their boss. And I used to kind of turn my nose at that quote because I always had good boss relationships. And I thought, you know, whatever. That sounds like a very kind of catchy thing to say, but I don't know if that's really true. Well, once I started getting into career coaching, I found that that was absolutely true. It was the rare person who said, you know what? I just love my manager and they invest in me and they grow me. So this is a difficult decision to leave this job because I feel like they just really level up my life. That was just not what I was hearing. So I wrote the book because of this one realization, ladies, and it was, I'm helping this person escape only to make way for another prisoner.
Oh.
Ooh.
And I couldn't stand that thought. I couldn't stand it that I knew that somebody else was so excited. They emailed their friends. They posted on Facebook. I got the job. And I knew what they were walking into. Now, I realize that not everyone is going to read my book. And that's still going to take place. I get that. But I honestly believe that most people go to work wanting to do a good job, and people who are not effective as managers largely are unaware of it. It is the rare person who goes in there and makes people's life hell on purpose. So what happens is there is a dynamic between the employee and the manager, a breakdown of some sort. They don't appreciate the person's strengths, their personalities conflict, their values aren't in alignment. There's something that breaks down in that relationship. And that manager who doesn't know how to communicate effectively, who doesn't know how to properly hire the right person for the right role in the first place, because it's their fault if that person doesn't fit. They don't know how to onboard that person effectively. They don't know how to train them properly. They don't know how to retain the person and not demotivate them. And they don't offboard people with respect. And because those things are happening, when they don't realize their behaviors are causing these problems, the employee starts to respond to that. And it could be that they're passive aggressive. It could be they're avoidant. It could be they are blatantly combative. There are lots of ways the employee can respond. And all of a sudden, the manager is like, who is this nightmare that I've hired? And they don't even see the connection of how their management style is actually fostering the response in that employee. So what happens is we don't know how to address issues effectively. So we tend to avoid. And then the employee feels iced out, or the manager becomes passive aggressive, or actively starts trying to work them out of the organization. And because the manager does not realize how they have brought this person into their organization, either brought the wrong person in, or didn't integrate them properly, or is not supporting them properly, they just assume this person's a bad employee. And so they actually feel justified in their behavior. If you speak to managers, they will tell you this person's lazy, they're slacking off, they've got a terrible attitude, whatever they're telling you. And they don't even realize how they have created the petri dish that has created the monster that they think their employee is. And it's really kind of interesting. I used to do management coaching. I would get 10 people a year who were new managers, and I would walk through the process for 1 year with them to help them coach their managers. And I ended up spending the majority of my time helping them deal with their own bad manager, for real. Managing up. That's how I spent the majority of my time, so that they could just even survive or manage or cope with the environment they were in. It was a real eye-opener for me that just because people have become senior managers or directors and they've been managing people for 15 years does not mean they're effective at it.
Right. Well, and I think that part of what happens is you get promoted up, and it's that whole Peter Principle thing, right? You get promoted to your level of ineffectiveness, and then, but then there's no training on how to do that new job.
Yeah. And even worse, when there is training, people go into the environment and their training isn't rewarded. Like it's really interesting. I interviewed a senior training manager who does management training in the book. And she said one of the things that happens is when people get training, they don't see their manager reinforcing it. And so they don't prioritize it. And because their manager isn't going to the management training or isn't doing the principles they learned, or those principles aren't reinforced or rewarded, they just go back to their old behavior.
Yep, so very true.
But you're right, 2/3. I interviewed people globally who manage people for the book. And 2/3 of the people, it was 66% or 68%, I forget, but 2/3. 2/3 of the people I interviewed told me they never received any sort of mentoring or training on how to manage people, which is unbelievable. And I'm in that 2/3. I found myself all of a sudden having no direct reports to having 31.
Wow.
Like overnight from moving from one job to another. And it was a wake up call when people would come into my office and say, why didn't you tell us that this was happening? And I was like, oh, you're so busy. You just forgot to communicate that. Or how come we weren't asked about this? we could have told you that this change wasn't going to work. And I started to realize that my job as a manager was actually tapping into the talents of the team and helping them do their job better. My attitude was, now I have all these people who are getting in the way of me getting my work done.
Yeah, I went through the exact same thing because I was in the same situation. You know, people were my peers, and then I went to a management position with zero experience. And I had in my head the right way to do it, but I learned exactly what you did. It's better to manage down, empower your team, let them make decisions, let them be a part of solutions. And it made all the difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when I started to change my approach and investing in my team and uncovering what they did best and supporting, removing roadblocks, teaching them how to make their own decisions through coaching conversations, and really demonstrating openness, honesty, fairness, competency, you know, just being a competent person and being a reliable person. When I started to really focus on the characteristics, than my tasks as a manager, if you will, but the characteristics and showing up how they wanted me to show up, they would do anything for me. I would send an email saying, hey, Ebony called out sick today. Could someone cover her phone shift? And I would get 5 emails. I will. And I'd have to kind of like pick the first person that volunteered. And that I came to realize was not happening in the rest of the organization with the other operations managers. They had to voluntell people to do things.
Well, so when does the book come out?
So it's on sale now for pre-order. If people go to blackrosewriting.com, if you use pre-order 2019, I think it's all in caps, pre-order 2019 at blackrosewriting.com, you can just search your team and it'll on the search and it'll pull up the book. You can get 15% off. It's like $16.95 with 15% off that. Once it releases February 20th on Amazon and everywhere else, the price goes back to full price.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I'll be promoting the heck out of it because it is so needed.
One of the things I address in the book, actually, to your point, Deb, when you talked about the Peter Principle, is management a good use of my talent? That's the first thing I address in the book. Should you even be going down this path? Because a lot of people say they became a manager because they were handed the promotion or they thought it was the next logical step in their career. Those are the top 2 reasons why people became managers in my survey. And so I decided to help people realize, hey, you have other talents and other options. And some people want to go deeper. They want to move into an expert role, not be a ladder climber. Vertical climbing is only one career type. You have spiralers, lateral movers, expert SME types. That's just one career path, one career pattern. I'm not a ladder climber, obviously, because I'm a business owner. But yeah. And I don't want to be a ladder climber. I actually didn't. And oh, Deb, I'm so glad you had mentioned about what you said about people think they should be doing skills they're good at but don't enjoy. You just hit the nail on the head with me on this one. I did become a good manager. I had someone write me a Facebook message, which I include in the book. I managed her in 2010. And she wrote me in February of this year. She's now a senior level manager in her organization. And she told me all of the things that you taught me are responsible for the path I've taken and these promotions I've gotten, because all of the mentoring and coaching and development that you did with me prepared me for this path. And it was it appealed to my values of wanting to make a difference in people's lives, but I don't like managing people.
Yeah.
I have to say, neither do I. And I work by myself.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to manage other people. And I don't know if I'm good at it or not. I didn't do it for very long, but I don't like it. Now, on the other side of that, I love managing the relationship with my clients.
It's a different relationship, right?
I have a great relationship. It's a very different relationship. I love the give and take. I love the brainstorming. I love the coming up with solutions for their needs. That's the thing that I love to do. And I'm good at it.
Doing good work with people who are equals. And I believe that employees are equals, but they will subordinate themselves. And I used to not like that. I would say, you're my teammate, you're my team member. We have different roles that we perform, but we offer equal value. And they would still call me, this is my boss. And I'm like, I don't like that word. It's just awful. And the other thing I don't like about managing people is I'm a maximizer. I like to focus on people's strengths. I can't stand having to have conversations around, why are you late?
Yeah.
Why do you keep being late for work? And okay, we can't send emails like that to our customers. I didn't like having to have those constructive feedback conversations every day of my life with a different person every day because people weren't adulting on their own.
Right. Yeah, it sucks the life out of you.
So it was like kind of HR stuff. I don't mind constructive feedback that helps people grow if they gave a presentation. And it's like, well, I noticed some things that I think might help you improve if you're interested in some feedback around your presentation style. That sort of feedback doesn't bother me. But having to talk about why coworkers can't get along with one another or how they were using language that was offensive to someone, all that stuff, I didn't like having to deal in that. And anytime you deal with people, you're going to have people problems. And so there was no way that was going to go away.
Yeah, I'm starting to get hives as you're talking about that because it's all coming back to me.
Yeah, I do have a direct report now, but I don't treat her that way. And I've kind of trained her to not think of me that way because she kept saying, calling me her boss, and her boss, she's doing that. She's the best. But we'll go for lunch together. Usually every week we try to get together. We're both doing the Arbonne 30 thing right now, which makes eating out difficult. But we will get together and spend time together. And I'll say, look, you can be autonomous in your work. We're supporting one another, doing different functions. And so we've really kind of gotten into a groove. I don't do performance reviews. I don't believe in performance reviews. I believe in giving regular feedback in the moment when the feedback is needed. And I do that. I think performance reviews are simply a joke. And I think that companies use them because they have to have some sort of metrics for bonuses and raises. And that's why they do that. And I know that if they leave managers to their own devices, they won't give feedback because 70% of people avoid conflict.
Yep.
I believe it.
And you know what happens? Because people avoid it, and then it gets to the point, let's just say you've got an employee and they're doing something incorrect with their work and you're frustrated, but you fix it yourself and then you move on, and it keeps happening, and you send an email and you're like, hey, the numbers are wrong on this, you need to whatever. And it keeps happening and it keeps happening. And because the person is avoiding figuring out why, what is the issue? Do they have access to old data? Are they accessing a file that they shouldn't be accessing? Like, there might be a why behind it that you're not aware of and they think they're doing it right. Were they not trained properly? Because it's avoided, the person reaches their breaking point and then they just blow up all over the person. And sometimes the blow up isn't aggressive. Sometimes it's icing them out. It depends on the person's personality, how their dysfunctional behavior is going to show up. So then that never makes anything better. And it's downhill from there. Avoidance, I always say this, problems that are avoided become bigger problems that take more time and resources to solve.
Oh yeah, amen to that. That is so true. This has been so fun. And I cannot wait till people read this book. Again, everyone, February 20th, it comes out, but it's available for pre-order now. So Kristen, aside from your book, you also have a UMAP certification in January, as well as a free recorded webinar for job seekers. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Oh my goodness, I'd love to. I'm excited about the free webinar, so I'll tell you about that. So I partnered with Lila Smith and Jennifer Spohr. So if you don't know either one of those people, Jennifer Spohr is a transformation coach for women, and she helps women bust through their limiting beliefs and tap into their higher guidance and intuition, because a lot of us don't know how to do that. So I go first and I talk about how to align to your four pillars of career satisfaction. then Lila goes next and she talks about how do you now communicate what you've learned about yourself and who you are to, whether it's an entrepreneurial journey or job seeker, whatever you're transitioning. It's for people in transitions, career transitions. So how do you then go ahead and communicate that? Whether you're communicating in an interview or a LinkedIn profile or networking event, she covers that. And then Jennifer covers, now how do you overcome these limiting beliefs that are talking you out of taking the step that you know that you need to take? So there is a link, bit.ly/calledtomore. That's the URL to the webinar. And I think, yeah, you'll get, so you just click purchase and it'll be $0 on there because it'll be free. And it'll send you an email with a link to actually access it and a password for it. We are password protecting it, but it'll be free. And the certification, that is really exciting. We've got an evening certification that starts January 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern. And then we have a daytime one that starts the 7th on Tuesday. I had so much interest that I have to create two classes. And that starts at 11:30 a.m. And we're certifying people to help people discover their four pillars of career fit. So some people getting certified are using it in their companies with professional development and career pathing and hiring. And some people are just using it for personal branding with their clients, all different people. But we have our first coach from India.
Oh, great.
Exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting.
I can say, first of all, Jennifer Spohr was on our show and Jennifer's amazing. And Lila Smith is also amazing. I was a part of her mastermind and learned so much. And so the three of you together, oh my gosh, what a powerhouse.
It's a soul sister trifecta.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Honestly, Kristen, we've had such a good time. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
You two are the best. I think like I could talk to you like into the night.
Yeah.
We'd love that.
Yes.
I really appreciate you asking me to be on. And Carol, remind me to tell you, we'll have a chat another time about how the divine breadcrumb actually connects to your strength driver. We speak our strengths, and I'll explain to you why the divine breadcrumb connects to your connectedness theme.
I would love that.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen. This was great. And it was so nice to meet you. Carol's spoken of you often, and I had a great time and so much great information. Where can people find you?
So you can find me either at my website, myumap.com, or kristensherry.info, either one. Or you can reach me on LinkedIn. I'm linkedin.com/in/Kristen with two I's and Sherry, Sherry. And Kristen with a K.
Great. And we will put all of that in our show notes as well so that people listening can find you. Go and check it out. Read the book. Check out the new book. Take advantage of that discount. We'll put the link for that in as well. Thank you so much for joining us, Kristen. This was so much fun. And as always, you can catch our show on the website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, please leave us a comment or a review or send us an email. We love hearing from all of you. Thanks again for listening, everybody.
Bye, everybody.